Welcome to the What Is Your Legacy podcast. I'm your host, Galen Girmay, and this is a podcast about my amazing guests' legacy. My guests are sharing some deep stories about their intended legacy. We laugh, we cry, and we have some of the most beautiful moments together. What Is Your Legacy podcast is available on any of the major podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple, and Google. Please subscribe so you don't miss any new conversations. And if this podcast made you think about your own legacy, I'd love it if you would leave a review. Today, I have the absolute pleasure to sit down and speak with Dale Dupree, who is known as the warrior of copy selling. That's how he started his sales career. And then he created the Sales Rebellion about 2 years ago. And he is known to be a servant leader in the community, and he truly is. So in this episode, we talk about the foundation of his legacy, his dad, talk about his family. And we also talk about three main themes around generational legacy, networking, building a legacy, and then protecting your legacy. So we'll dive into all of these different topics. And at some point, it gets really emotional talking through his experiences, creating this legacy and the impact that he's having on so many people all around the globe. And so I'm honored to have Dale as the very first guest on this episode, and I hope you enjoy hearing his story next.
Welcome back for another amazing podcast with the one and only Dale Dupree. Welcome, Dale. I'm super psyched to have you here today to talk about your legacy.
You're psyched. I'm psyched to be here with you. So
for everyone else who doesn't know this already, although if you did check out the previous episode, I talked about who my first guest is, and it's Dale Dupree, because Dale, you were the first person I told about this idea before I made it public, before I shared it with anybody else. You were the first person I was like, hey, I have this idea about a podcast. What do you think about it? Is it absolutely crazy, or is this something I should go for? You remember that day when I texted you this?
I do very well. I remember even thinking that it's interesting how many times people will text or ask me about an idea that they have, and typically I have to sit and think honestly about what it is that they're saying. But as soon as I read your heart, your vision, what it is that you're creating here, I knew immediately that my answer would be to encourage you to do it.
Yeah. And I knew you would be the first person I would want to do this with, because you always talk about, for everyone who's seen your content knows about this, like you talk about servant leadership, when you're talking about what you're doing with the Sales Rebellion and how that came about. And I'm convinced that regardless of what profession you would have ended up doing, that still would be the core of who you are, because that is literally who you are, right? Like that's what I know about you. And I'm sure everyone else who knows you from way back when would say the same thing. At the core of who you are, at the heart and your mission, this is what you're about. It's about leaving a legacy, right? So when you're talking about servant leadership, you're talking about the legacy that you want to leave behind. And I know we've heard the stories of the kind of legacy that your father left behind, and that is going with you all the time, every single day. So that's at least my understanding of who you are so far from the time I've known you for the past couple of months. So I want to kick it over to you and just try jump right into the conversation. Like, what is your legacy? What do you want your legacy to be?
See, this is my favorite question. I don't think you realize what you've done just now. I'm going to talk forever at this point. But but I would say, too, that like what I think is important for people to understand when they answer this question is that a legacy has to be bigger than what it is specifically that they are leaving. It has to be something that not just like flows through their veins, that they bleed, that they live, that they walk, that they sweat, that they cry, that they persevere through. It has to, that they triumph through as well too, I should say. It has to always also be a continuation of something else that has created what they are in the first place. I believe in this idea and mindset around, if you're a spiritual person, around creation in general. So you've been put on this earth and you have a purpose, right? And it's not the idea either of like, just because that's a fact to some people and not to others, that somehow you're going to have that purpose figured out by any means. But that's the whole point of a legacy, right? Is that if we know in the back of our head that there is a purpose for our life and that we want to have a purpose-driven walk while we're here, a legacy starts at that moment of that mindset shift to begin with. Now, for me, my legacy is, and what I want people to understand about my legacy more than anything, is that I want them to see my dad. I want them to see my dad as a huge piece and a component to the puzzle of what it is that my legacy looks like to begin with. I also, because I have this vision and I have this understanding and this love that stems from a very altruistic place in my very being, that I can also extend that same thought to my son. And so for me, it's almost as if I'm living to honor the legacy of my father, while also to create a legacy that my son will be honored by just the same. Mm-hmm. And by looking at it as almost like generational wealth, right? When it comes to this concept of what my legacy is, that it's a different form of wealth, right? But that it's a legacy that isn't just focused on Dale. Because the other piece of that is that I think what people forget is that nobody really cares. Nobody really cares about your legacy. Like, nobody cares what you're doing and how you're doing it. You have to make them believe. And that's something that happens over time. It's not something you can force on people. It's a lifestyle. It's a consistency.
But it's making them believe in themselves, not necessarily.
Yes. That's the unlock. Is it's allowing someone to see through belief in your actions that they can do it too, right? That's the big piece of the puzzle. It's like in everything that we do in life, and I'm in the sales world, right? So I consistently talk about this idea of, why are you sending messages to people, cold calling people, stopping by their office and speaking to them and talking about you and your product and how great it will be when they buy it from you, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody cares. Right, the status quo is the enemy of salespeople, and just as it is, because it's much easier to stay right where you are. Right, it's much easier to just, even if it sucks, because you don't know this crazy. Right, and that's how you look at it too. It could be something that fixes every part of your business, but you don't know it. So it could be a wild and brash decision for you to go over here and trust this other person. But what they do know is their consistencies. They do know what they want and what they believe and what they've experienced. And so creating familiarity, being something that's extremely relevant, these are all little keys and pieces of the puzzle to building a sales legacy, right? But if we boil those things down, what it truly affects is the human, right? We constantly talk about the buyer, the prospect. I mean, hell, I'm guilty of using that terminology as well too in my content. But what we teach internally, you know, to our students, and what we believe as a rebellion, is that they're people, that they're humans, and that they have their own legacy.
But that started with you. You are the one who, or I believe you also have a co-founder, no?
Yeah, at the Sales Rebellion, Jeff Villegas is my co-founder. Yeah, so the two of us are, and we sit on the same tier. There's no difference between what he does at the company and what I do at the company. Like, there might be differences in what we do specifically, but we have the same level of commitment and ownership from the perspective of this business.
Right. So I want to go back to something you talked about earlier, because I'm trying to understand you from this perspective of your legacy. You talked about purpose, right? When you have a purpose, that determines what your legacy will be, or what you're striving for your legacy to be. And I remember listening to one of your many podcasts out there, or webinars, or whatever it was, because you do so much. But I remember hearing you talking about when you lost your purpose, and when you were depressed, and when you didn't feel like existing anymore. And those are feelings and thoughts that I relate to, because I've been in that boat too. And I think this is part of what drove me closer to you and intentionally seeking out a connection and relationship with you and to learn, and because I'm empowered by you, I'm inspired by you and what you do. And I remember you talking about your purpose and how you, at some point in your life, you didn't have that clear maybe it wasn't purpose, but you just didn't want to exist, right? You don't want to continue doing what you were doing. You lost that hope. So what is your legacy now, and how was that created based on what you went through? And then we'll talk about your dad as well.
Yeah. So when it comes to, let's talk about depression and mental health for a second. Mm-hmm. At 15 years old, I tried to commit suicide, and it was a myriad of things that had kind of been festering and building up in my life. Even like through my spiritual walk, as a young man. But also like through reputation, through friendships, through community. I was kind of tormented at that point in my life, you know, regardless of like what you see and how you hear me and you think, wow, what a confident guy. Like, look, we've all been 15 and not understood what was happening. And I was myself individually, I should say, was at a place where that sadness and that darkness was pretty big. And it was not something that I was familiar with or understood or could control. And I also had this outlook of that, I guess this is what life is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really want that. And so stemming from that came this fight where for the next about 10, 11 years, I fought consistently. I fought daily. I fought weekly. I fought monthly. I fought yearly. And I kept myself moving forward and heading up my mountain. Mm-hmm. But there came a time again where even in the midst of my sales success that, you know, and I was making good money and things were good. And I mean, you could look at my life and think like, wow, this guy's going to be, he's going to be one of the top producers. He already is. He's going to run this company. He's got a beautiful wife. He's got a great lifestyle. Like, this is the guy. And I had another issue of getting to the bottom and not being able to clearly communicate and to express myself in the way that I felt in a way that anybody else could understand. Matter of fact, you know, when I would mention certain things and I would hear reactions, I would say to myself, well, this person's not going to understand. And so why would I tell them any more than this? They're just going to, all they're going to do is worry, or they're going to try to Baker act me, or they're going to constantly be annoying me. So it's like, mm-hmm. my thought process. And so I let things fester. And there's this other thing about servant leaders that we tend to forget about ourselves, you know, and what I would say too about servant leadership and why I know I am and believe I'm a servant leader is because my father, that's his legacy. My dad, and we can talk about it a little bit more when we get into him, but my dad set the precedence and he set the example. And so, you know, every single step of the way in my life, when there was a decision to be made, I always asked, how does this affect other people? And I believe that that's one of the most important things that we should be asking ourselves. But you tend to, especially somebody that battles with depression, you tend to start to forget about yourself as well too. And I'm not a me first person, and I never will be. And anybody that tries to like influence that part of my life, I typically tell, I listen and I typically stop and I tell them like, listen, you have an outlook and I love it and I think it's great and I appreciate the encouragement, but don't try to force how you feel on other people. It's the same as when someone says, you know, like, I understand your depression. No, you don't. You don't understand my depression. And people that I share depression with, like you mentioned earlier, I don't know what yours is like compared to mine. I know that we find common ground in certain areas of battling it and it pressing up against us. But I know the best thing for you, if you were to ever to come to me and tell me these things, is not to say, let's get you out in the sun and let's go do something and this and that, but just to listen and just to be there for you and meet you in that moment and be weak with you, because there's power in that weakness that we don't tap into. And I'll tell you, I'll say this because I just started talking about it and I believe in being transparent about this stuff, is that I really felt like that last time was it. I really did. I felt like I beat it real good. You know, the circumstances around it, the idea and the way that like my dad encountered me that day, and then my wife uncovering the lies that I'd been telling myself and telling other people around my lifestyle of hate in regards to my anger and the way that I was very violent in a very dark manner, but also in a like a silent manner, right? Where I grew up in a scene, a punk rock scene, right? And so you'd go to shows and fight people. It was my favorite thing to do. And I denounced that person and who that guy was in my life. That is not who I am. And it was things that stemmed from that that caused me to slowly to lie to the people around me and to be unfaithful to the people around me and to live a double lifestyle, which led to me saying that I'm not good enough and I've failed everything. And how do you come back from this? And
not just putting, that, but you feel like probably you failed yourself, because if you know that this isn't who I'm supposed to be or this is not who I want to be, then you get this other sense of the guilt. The other side of it is not just am I disappointing other people around me, but I'm disappointing myself. And that is the hardest part to get through.
True. The best way to describe that, right, is to say that you don't recognize anything that's happening when you wake up. You don't recognize what you've done. You feel that you have completely tarnished your own existence. Right. And you sit and you think to yourself, I'll never be that person so many times. I'll never act like this. You watch the movie and you say, what a dork. I'll never do that. What a dumbass. I'll never make that decision. Right. And then you do it. And that's a piece of it, though, that comes with this whole identity of what depression truly is, because it's much bigger than just being sad. It is. A very intense emotion that takes you to this place of not wanting to exist anymore at all. And that's a powerful emotion. It's a very evil place and it's a very powerful emotion because of that. But furthermore, when I got out of it, I declared victory and I pretended, in my head, I guess, that I could never go back. And I had little spurts of depression here and there, and I communicated them when they happened, but I never really took the steps necessary to truly heal myself. I just exposed what was happening and said, oh, that's it. It's all done. And this year has been an extremely tough year for me. It's been the best year of my business life, especially with the rebellion. And although it's only the second year, it's awesome to sit back and say that in year two that we're doing things like getting an office and traveling all over the United States. And then, all of a sudden COVID happens and we blew up, we tripled our business overnight because of the pivot that we had made and been ready for when it came to the business environment. But the toll that came with it was that suddenly we were out of time and that the stresses of not having time would slowly seep in. And so everybody has been through 2020, that's listening to this, that has been working, has been through the same thing from the perspective of that. We've all been cooped up at home. If we have kids, we've had to be around them a lot more. If we have a spouse, we've had to be around them a lot more. And it was almost like rediscovering something that exists in your life that you didn't really truly have a connection with to some extent. But what I'll tell you is that like I didn't feel that way as much as I just felt like humbled and blessed to be home with him as much as I was. However, I started to slowly realize that they were the only thing that really was creating happiness in my life. And that although I was saying I liked what I was doing and I love what I do, trust me when I say that, that I started to look at this legacy that I am building and this idea of who I am. And I started to recognize that I am going through the motions. Matter of fact, I had a friend, put up a post saying rest in peace to one of his friends who, I maybe saw the kid once ever, twice ever. So I didn't really know him. But he committed suicide in May, April. And of this year, and he had a 7-year-old son, and I actually read the letters. I read his suicide notes to his family members, to his son, and I actually said even out loud, I had a breakdown and I said out loud to my business partner, who's also my best friend. And I told him, I said, I recognize that I could never do this to anybody. I could never go through, live with myself going through the idea of pulling the trigger, for lack of a better way to say it. And then all of a sudden July and August creep up and I am completely disconnected with everything that's going on in my life, and literally having like this 10-year attack on my life is how I look at it now. It's almost like my depression like comes and goes throughout these 10 years, but then at a certain point it fights me like it's never fought before. And right before my birthday, I mean, it would be a lie if I told you anything else. I was having suicidal thoughts again for the first time in such a long time, and even having very vivid dreams around that idea, and like plotting even in my mind like what it looked like, and starting to just give up again. And it was intense. And I recognize, and I say all this to tell everybody that's listening, that what happened next was that God put things in my life that were absolutely overwhelming in the way that they showed up. They showed up in the form of people. Sometimes they showed up in the form of just stuff that got sent in the mail to me randomly, right? And in ways that people didn't know what I was even going through even. And then my birthday happened and I cracked like an egg. And realization of just how big this community is that I've built so far and how much bigger it will be. And what I mean by big is I mean impactful. And I don't mean in the way that I'm impacting people. I mean in the way that people are lifting up each other, picking up arms and standing beside every single person that's a part of this community. It's intense to even think about. But I started to truly see my purpose in those moments outside of just my vision for my purpose, right? Because I think there's a big difference there. Like what I thought that I was and that I wanted to live for was more of a vision than it was the actual purpose itself. You know, because consistently throughout our life too, we hit these crossroads, these pivots, these speed bumps, these forks in the road. And those are things that will challenge us and cause us to sit back and say like, well, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Is this part of my purpose to begin with? And in that moment, what I really realized was that I have to start talking more about the way I truly feel. I set my wife down and I told her things that I haven't said to her ever. And I told her stuff that I've been struggling with and silent over for the last couple of years. And I said, and I'm telling you all this because I love you more than anything in the world and I don't want to leave you. And and vice versa, I don't want you to be pushed away from me. And because if I were to lose her, I'm, you know, from the perspective of what I do struggle with when it comes to my depression, I don't know what I would do. Yeah, I'm just being honest, like that would be a very bad time in my life. And so being proactive around protecting my legacy more so than just like trying to live it out, but actually protecting, defending the people that also protect it with me, and thinking about more than just myself, but also coming back to who I am and recognizing the power that I do have on a daily basis to be able to control my outcomes. And so instead of like sitting back and saying, oh, I got to focus on me, I sit, for me, this is how it works for me. And it doesn't work like this for everybody. I sit back and say, if you aren't the healthiest you can be, if your mindset isn't on this level of understanding that what it is that you do every day is bigger than yourself in the first place, right? Until you can get to that point, you can't really truly understand what it means to love yourself, because loving yourself and being true to yourself affects every single person around you. If that is what it is that you're living your life to do in the first place, and that's what I'm doing. And so I started to slowly recognize like I've been giving so much away from a place that I'm forcing it from, instead of coming back to myself and loving myself and meeting myself in these moments, and also being loud about things that I protect other people from, right? That's a lie that I was telling myself. And so really, like, I think the big answer to the small question is that a legacy is built around the idea of experiencing what life truly is in the first place, and that we all have a different story. And that embracing your story is extremely important. And trying to run from certain things like your mental health, or, you know, sitting around saying, no, I beat that. I beat that. That's arrogance. You know, understand that, like, from the perspective of who you are, yes, you could definitely beat it. I believe that. But don't be arrogant about it. Be realistic and have a mindset of not of from a self-centered standpoint, not of thinking this way because it helps me to be better, but thinking this way because what I project will affect the people around me. A legacy is shared, right? A legacy is not a solo ride, and that's all there is to it.
Love that. So first of all, thank you for sharing all of you with me and with anyone else who's listening and will be listening for years to come. You talked about something and I took notes of it because it made me think about this concept of having a network, and the network that you're building and the community that you're building and the communities that you're a part of, the network of your legacy. Because you have a very, very clear idea. It's, you know, you ask some people like, hey, what's your legacy? And they're like, I don't know. Never thought about it. Right. Never. And then that's okay, because not everyone has got to, they're not ready or they're not there yet, or that hasn't been on their radar. It hasn't been an intentional point to think about. Right. But you have intentionally thought about your legacy. You've built your life around your legacy. You're very clear on what that is because of the experiences that you've had. And what it made me think about when you shared this is like your network of a legacy, because you as Dale are creating your legacy through and with other people, right? It starts with you. And then you have the people you work with on the Sales Rebellion who are being impacted every day. And they're seeing firsthand what you're creating, what you're doing, what your legacy is. And you have your family and you have your friends and you have this entire community and multiple communities that you're affecting. So what I'm seeing is like this, just almost like, if we want to bring LinkedIn to this conversation, it's almost like the first degree of your network that you're impacting with your legacy. And then you have a second and then a third, because let's say you have 10 people, I don't know how many people you have right now on the Sales Rebellion that are coaches, but let's say it's 10 people. Those 10 individuals have their groups of people and they have their groups of people. So you continuously just keep spreading out what your legacy is because you're so intentional about it. So I think that's like fascinating in how you think and who you are and what you do. The other part, and I want to change the direction and talk about another aspect, is the generational legacy that you're leaving, right? Let's sit with that, because you have created a legacy and you know what your legacy is because of your experience with your father, and you also have a son. So you're in the middle of this. So how do you think about the generational legacy for you, and how are you impacting your son, and how does he know about your dad and his grandfather?
Yeah. So I look at it, cause I even my grandfather was a salesperson as well too, for Nabisco. Mm-hmm. It's like went from like delivery truck driver to salesperson. And it's an awesome story. It's like Navy before that. And every generation has this completely different upbringing too. You know, you can look at my grandfather and he was a great man, but he raised my dad differently than my dad raised me. And my dad broke curses in those moments of deciding to treat me differently. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing the same thing for my son, and not from the perspective of changing things that my dad did to me, because my dad did everything exactly the right way. And I don't know that there's a lot of people out there that can say that. And I'm grateful to that. I can't even express in words how it makes me feel. But what's important to me is that my son sees the same compassion, that he understands what inclusivity is and truly means, that he knows what it looks like when it comes to treating a woman with respect inside of not just his household, if he decides that he likes women, but also in the community at large, right? That my dad taught me these things that are very important, that we look at as taboo subjects, or we say things like, I'm not racist, but we never act anti-racist, right? My dad was that person that taught me that it's not just about saying I'm not, it's about being the thing that everyone else is skirting around the issue about in the first place. Everyone's afraid to do it, son. You know, that was always the thought process. My dad would say, when I started doing my crazy marketing stuff, my dad would say, do it. I'd be like, really? That's okay. Yeah, man, do it, because no one else is doing it and no one else will do it. You're the only guy that's going to go out there and try this stuff. And so you can tell us how it worked. And that's the idea too, of like empowering people and meeting them where they are and saying, let's go. Let's see what happens. And if you mm-hmm. fail, it's part of your legacy, right? It's part of your learning. It's part of your journey and embracing that side of things. So I hope my son knows my grandfather, knows my father, knows me, and knows himself. You know, that's how I look at it, right? And so he'll learn the traditions. He'll learn all the little things. Like my dad took me hunting a lot. I don't know that I'm going to do that with my son because I'm kind of a wuss about hunting in my older age here, like because I'm a dog owner and like killing an animal the same size as, you know, my first dog is one of the saddest things I've ever done in my life. Like, oh, I killed this thing that could have been my dog. You never seen a grown bearded man crying in a blind in the middle of the woods, you know, so hard than that moment. But see, that's the point though, right? Of our legacies and like, and what it is that we're building and breathing and being in the first place is that we will change throughout life as mm-hmm. well too. We have to be open to that. We have to, and it's not about just like going, oh, I'm changing. It's about the idea of saying, I'm looking at life from a different lens in these moments. Mm-hmm. And that the lens that I looked at before might be more selfish than anything else. And to be able to sit back and very altruistically compare those things and have accountability partners in that too and say, hey, I've been thinking a little bit more like this. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And hearing what others have to say as well too. And because it's not, again, it's not the idea of a legacy is not just this solo effect, right? It's the idea of that it will affect my son if I make choices that aren't going to complement who he is and what he's building. And vice versa, like as he's getting older, he's going to make choices that are going to enrage me, right? And it's in those moments that I have to decide, like, am I going to let him live his life and build his legacy the same way my father did for me? Or am I going to falter in those moments? And I'm not saying that I won't. And I'm not saying that my dad didn't in certain times as well too. It just happens, right? But being ultra aware of that and being able to fall on your sword and bend the knee to the other person and say, I'm here for you first and foremost. That's mm-hmm. a generational legacy worth living.
Absolutely. Also, I have two more questions that I want to touch on before we unfortunately have to wrap up this conversation, because I could speak for another couple of hours about this because there's so much to unpack. But the question is, you know, because you and your wife are raising your son together, are these the kind of conversations, like I know that you have a great relationship with her and you share, and you just told all of us how much you shared of the things that she didn't even know. And then you're like, okay, let me tell you everything. Like, here's the things that you haven't been aware of yet, or that you don't know certain parts about me. Let me share that to create an even stronger bond between the two of you. So I'm imagining that you also have had conversations with her about your legacy and what she wants her legacy to be and how you, based on that, are raising your son. Is that the type of conversation that you two have had as well about your individual legacies and kind of what your, I guess, family legacy in some ways would look
yes.
like?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, so we've had Trip for 2.5 years now, and we've been married for 13 going on 14. We've been together for 18 years. It's a crazy yeah. thought. 17 going on 18 is what I should say. I always like jump to the next year after we get to the last one, but it's in the micro. Everybody listening right now, it's in the micro. It's in all the micro things. Like you might, like your wife might know your political stance. She might know your religion. You know, mm-hmm. she might know the big things that everybody else knows anyway, because you know, gloat about it on Facebook, right? But she doesn't, or he doesn't know the small things. The little things, like stop doing that with the trash. It pisses me off, right? Those are the things that you got to talk about, because that's part of this idea of the identity of your home, what makes you feel comfortable in your home, what keeps you in a good space and having a good attitude in your home is this idea of the love language of your spouse. Because when you can speak their love language through all the micros, we're not talking about just sex here. We're talking about the micros and all the little things that make them feel like they matter. Mm-hmm. Like that's a huge piece of the puzzle that we miss out on so much, because we just think, oh, we're married now, let's just go through the motions. No freaking way. Like, let's be mm-hmm. leaders, right? Mm-hmm. Let's go all in. Let's connect on this level that we were called to connect on, because we don't have much time on this earth in the first place. And your spouse is this very unique person that will drive you to do the greatest things that you've never could have done without them in your life to begin with. So absolutely, it's so important to make sure that they're part of every single decision from a generational legacy standpoint and from their individual legacy as well too. But again, I go back to that idea of that the legacies complement each other. Like if you looked at my dad and you looked at my mom, you would say that just as much as my dad left a very impactful legacy, and my mom is still leaving hers, and that it is just as powerful, and not to discount it, right? Don't sit back and think somehow hers is just whatever now that he's gone. Like hers will be massive, and it will help in our family. It will help generationally for the grandkids and the way that they treat their kids as well too. And that aspect and that form of like what love truly is and what a legacy really should be in the first place.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. That's a really, really good perspective. And thank you for bringing that up. And the last thing, and something you've talked about throughout this whole time, is your dad and his legacy. So curious to know, in an alternative world, if you had the opportunity, and I'm sure you thought about this many times, I think about it all the time, thinking about the people that meant a lot in my life growing up. Like my dad also passed away when I was 9 years old. So I thought about that for many years, and it took me a long time to talk to others about that loss and the ways I was raised and all of that stuff. And then my foster mom passed away 5 years ago. So I've had those big losses, and I've thought many times as you're going through, you know, big life moments, whether that was having your son or getting married or whatever point after you lost someone who had a big part in your life, you get to these moments sometimes, or even on a random Sunday or like a Tuesday evening, right? You think about that person, you say, I wonder what life could have been like. And I know you shouldn't really be like, coulda, shoulda, woulda, but you do get into those moments sometimes when you need that comfort of some sort, or just understanding of what's happening to me right now. Maybe it was, you know, during your birthday of like feeling really depressed and feeling like, I don't want to do this shit anymore. Like, and you wish that this person was there to kind of comfort you and for you to start thinking in a different direction. But my question to you is this: if your dad could magically appear, what would you want him to know right now?
I think it's a great question. I think one thing that is different about me, and maybe there's others out there listening that have the same, that feel the same, and they're nodding their head right now, which is that my dad never left. So for me, when I think of my father and I think of what I would hope that he would see me doing, I don't just hope for it, and I don't just think about it. I know he's here.
How do you know that he's here?
Oh, well, man, my dad is so present in my life. It's insane. And the way that little things happen and little moments happen, people, you know, using his nickname to describe things, you know, and moments that they don't even realize what's happening. All these little spiritual ways. The kids called him Dandy. Right. And then there's all these little things that just throughout my whole entire life that have always been present from a memory standpoint around some of the biggest moments where my dad shows up. You know, at the funeral, I gave the eulogy, which was absolutely the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. But it was important. And I stood up in front of over 1,000 people in this room. I looked out and was just washed in this overwhelming feeling of who are these people? And maybe they're at the wrong funeral, even. That's one of the thoughts I had, because I didn't recognize half of them either. And as I sat and looked at that crowd, I could feel my dad standing next to me. I could feel him. I could like sense him, the whole works, however you want to put it. And about 6 months later, I ran into somebody and they said, gosh, I've been trying so hard to see you and get in front of you. I wanted to tell you something. And they said that when you, they said when you stood up in front of everybody to give that eulogy, they said, I had a vision of your dad standing behind you with his hand on your shoulder and giving you the mantle of patriarch of the family in those moments and telling you that he'll be with you every step of the way. And it's that mindset, because we can seek to forget. If we really truly want that, we can. It's easy, right? I choose not to. I choose to stay deep in the hurt, because it's the hurt that really shows the power of the love that my father had for us, for me specifically, for his community. It's thinking about him letting people that he barely knew to sleep on the couch because they were going through a divorce or they had a DUI and he was driving them to work every day for months at a time with no expectation of being paid back by any of these individuals either. I so many crazy things that I watched my father do, from donating copy machines to staying up late at night in the office and running menus for people just so that they would have what it is that they needed and desired. My father was the quintessential servant leader. He did everything with a smile. He lived with chronic pain in his ankles that he never complained about. Yet at 2 a.m, when I was sneaking out of the house as a teenager, you could hear him clacking them against the ground. A memory and a sound that would haunt most people, but that I find comfort in when I think about it, because to me it was perseverance. Especially now in my older age, I see it as trials and tribulations that my father was beating on a daily basis, right? And the only thing that I would really change about his posture and manner, the manner that he lived his life, is that I'm going to take, and I am taking, a lot more stock in my personal health, because my dad told us, you know, toward the end, he died of cancer. And he told us toward the end, the only thing he would do different was what he consumed and how he treated his body from a healthy perspective. And so to me, that's part of the legacy too. It's part of, those are hard truths that we're afraid to talk about. You know, like, there's not a lot of people that are dying of cancer that go, fast food did this to me. You know, like that, like, that's not a conversation we have, but my father thought deep. My father looked at everything, and my father wasn't afraid to admit mistakes either. And to be mindful at that, just the same, you know. So for me, like, my dad's here right now listening to this and in my mindset. And so really, when I tell you that my dad is here, even though, yes, I do believe that there is some form of him, you know, still following me around on this earth to some capacity, whether you want to call that, you know, an angel or a spirit, I just see it as my dad. But what I'm really telling everybody listening is that this is a mindset that you can choose to walk away from or to embrace. If you really, 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 really believe, if you really believe that your life has meaning and your life has purpose, and those that came before you that instilled it into you, that have given it to you, that have left you, that they also, you know, are a big part of your life, then don't let them go in the first place. Talk to them, you know, speak to them. Allow them to be part of your decision-making even. You know, what would my dad think? What would he say? What would be some of the lessons that he would want to come back to tell me about? And that's in more than just like sitting around and trying to figure it out. It's in also surrounding yourself with his or her old friends, right? If it's your mom, right? Or your dad, his or her mentors, right? The people that they mentored outside of you even. Stay around those people. Stay engaged with those people. And your dad or your mom will never, ever leave your side. I guarantee you.
Yeah. Wow. That was, I was this close to getting tears when you first said that he's still here, because the first thing that popped into my head, and I think this happens when you hear somebody else talk about something that you relate to emotionally, there were many things about your dad that I saw in my foster mom. She was just as selfless. See, she was that woman. I mean, she took me in and all my 4 siblings from the time we were babies and young kids. She took us in into her own family. And she was that person in the community that everybody knew. Everybody sent their kids over after school because she was the community daycare mom, right? Like, she had the doors open. We would have people come at any hour of the day to get help. And she would get up in the middle of the night to go pick somebody else up from a party, not even us, the kids, but like even their the kids' friends, right? They would call her instead of calling their own mom and be like, hey, can you help us out? We're in a sticky situation. But what it made me think about was what happened a couple of months ago right here where I live with my youngest sister, who grew up with her since she was a baby, was that she's terrified of spiders. And I remember growing up how our foster mom, everything, she was also afraid of spiders, but every time she would see one in this old house that they grew up in, she would take like a glass like this, empty one, she would put it upside down to cover the spider, right? And eventually the spider would die. So one morning, I remember at like 6 a.m, I walk into the kitchen to make coffee, and I see this kind of empty glass on the floor. And I just stopped and I looked at it. I knew it was a spider in there, and I just like smiled, because that's how I get reminded that she's still here. The things that she taught other people, like my sister, these smallest things, they're still reflected. They're still happening. And that made me like being reminded of her and her existence and the impact that she had in other people's lives. So that's just like one example of it. But yeah, this has been an amazing conversation, Dale. Thank you so much for everything that you shared and completely opening up. I have like 500 more questions, but we don't have enough time. So I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. Let me talk.
Yeah, thank you. We'll be right back.